You're listening to Voice Actor Showcase, episode number 3. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Voice Actor Showcase, a podcast about voice actors and their stories. I'm Jun Yoon. Welcome to episode 3. First and foremost, I'd like to invite you to connect with us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Visit at Voice Actor Show. The Voice Actor Showcase is about voice actors on their journey to realize the dream of becoming an established voice actor. We're interested in telling the stories of countless voice actors around the world who are working hard to make their dream a reality. Whether that means they've purchased their Blue Yeti yesterday or is in the middle of searching for representation. As always, I'd like to mention that the voice actors being featured on this podcast are paid for their work. It's only $50 for payment, and I sincerely apologize. I don't mean to discount your voice work. It's just what I can afford at the moment. However, I promise and promise and promise to increase the pay for the voice actors for their time and effort as my earning potential gets bigger. I promise. If you have an interesting story to tell, and you're not someone widely known in the VO world quite yet, I'd love to have you on the show. Please contact us by visiting voiceactorshowcase.com. Today, we'll meet a voice actor from Denver, Colorado. He's been fascinated with video games since the age of 2 and has never really let go of his joy of play. His love of video games has led him to study digital media and streaming on Twitch and eventually to voiceover. After spending 18 years of his life as a high-level IT worker, he's recently returned to his love of video games as he secured a position in Illphonic, a video game studio best known for Friday the 13th, the game, of 2017, which took the Golden Joystick Award for Best Indie Game. Today, he lends his voice on various platforms like Reddit and Casting Call Club, as well as numerous short comic dubs produced for my YouTube channel. Please welcome Jeremy Johnson.
Discover the murder story of the king and queen that twists everything you know about SRPGs. You'll play as Sai, Violet, Rocky, and nearly an unlimited cast of other characters on their quest to find the truth. Bash your way with rocks, throw your boomer scissors, slash with paper tornadoes. You'll journey with them to find the murderers and uncover the revelations that will shake the world to its very core. We'll play Rock, Paper, Scissors on steroids.
All right, Jeremy Johnson. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Thanks for being on the show.
Happy to be here.
All right. Why don't we start from the beginning here? Your beginning involves a lot of video games, doesn't it? What are some of your favorite video games that you fondly remember as a child?
Oh, goodness. I think the franchise that really started it all off would be The Legend of Zelda. I played that when I was about 2 years old, and it's really stuck with me as a nostalgia piece and a sense of adventure and a very well-designed game, and just really have loved the isometric-style games. I think mainly pointed back to that that first title.
Is that the very first one where he wakes up in the hut in the Kokiri Forest, I think?
That is my understanding, yeah. So the one where you go, it's dangerous to go alone, take this, that whole first game.
Oh, the very first one. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Old school.
Yeah, very much so. Kind of dating myself there a little bit.
Oh, no. I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, I didn't get into Zelda until Master Sword.
Okay.
I think.
Ocarina of Time. Okay.
Yeah. That one. Ocarina of Time. Still, my favorite, still to this day, is the Majora's Mask. Oh, so good.
Yeah, that's a pretty stellar one as well. Yeah.
So good.
There's just so many good titles out of it. And of course, the newest Breath of the Wild blowing away all expectations.
I couldn't play it.
Oh, why is that?
I don't have a console.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I know. I know. I need to get one just so I can play the game.
I'm sure someone you know will let you borrow one.
You know what? That's a good idea. I think I'll post about it later on Facebook. Anyway, let's get back into it.
Okay.
Legend of Zelda. That's awesome. Now, you told me that you had studied computer science in college, and then you dropped out to pursue the IT career that you were after.
Yes.
That's not a very, light decision, isn't it, to drop out of college to pursue a career. Tell us about that experience.
Right. So it was about 2 weeks out of high school, I was looking to kind of get into a job to go alongside college. And here local to Colorado, there's a lot of military. It's a military like area. And there's a lot of contract work. So I went and got some temporary contract work doing some cable pulling at one of the military bases near here. And it was around that time that I had started college and things were going good. 6 months into my contract work, I got picked up as a full-time entry-level IT employee. My manager at the time was pretty good, and he kind of sat down with me and we had a conversation about where I might be able to go. And as I hit milestones in that kind of plan, I quickly realized that if I kept on focusing my time and energy and studies towards industry certifications, and my hobby was already computers and computer games, that my whole life kind of centralized around that at that point in my life. And I was able to really excel in my career. And the government at the time was making, the government I was contracted to through the company I was in, was starting to make a transition to much more towards the industry certifications rather than the 4-year degree as a merit of passage, if you will.
Yeah.
And it was through that series of events that I decided to depart from college and focus the majority of my time towards my career.
So it was actually more like a measured and carefully constructed decision, not a, I'm going to just quit college and pursue my IT career.
Probably the only one I ever made before I turned the age of 25. So I'm glad I did it, though.
Nice. And then it opened up various doors for you, didn't it? That's great.
Yeah, it absolutely did. A lot of what I learned there in the IT field, because I went from client support administration, touch labor desk stuff to VIP support to audiovisual. And I spent 4 years in audiovisual, which gave me a nice foundation much, much, much later in my life for getting into streaming and then voice acting.
Which we'll all talk about in a moment. Absolutely. Wow. Now, as a IT technician, person, contractor, worker, what's the best part of being an IT worker? And what's the worst part of being an IT worker?
So I can say in general that I think a lot of people that gravitate towards that as a passion, and this is very much true for myself, is that I like to solve problems. I like to be in that mindset. I like to approach things that are new and different, engaging, that I haven't seen before, and really tackle problems, especially ones I hadn't come across before. So I would position myself throughout my career to be kind of the guy who would less do the repeatable tasks and more who would say, hey, take the problems that are, you know, really difficult that you don't want to do, that might take a lot of time, and give them to me. I'll take those. And people were happy for it that were on my team. They're saying, hey,
my problems.
Right. Please take this huge task, or take this, whatever it is I don't want to do. And I relished in that. I love that. I love doing that. And I think that really did contribute to my success as well. And then as far as what's the worst thing about it, I would have to say that much like any kind of service job, there are some times where interactions can go south, but you learn to deal with those too, regardless of whether or not, you know, people have certain expectations about how things set, whether they're founded in reality or not is really up to the person. And then there are after hours works that come up when things break and stuff like that, especially if you're into uptime and maintenance and things along those sorts. But everything can be kind of seen with a silver lining. So I always love the fact that I had no traffic going to work when I got called in the middle of the night, and I got front row parking, and, you know, just
an optimist. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be sometimes.
I'm just imagining all the IT professionals that are thinking about voiceover, or they're like half and half right now going, yeah, that guy. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's some people in the audience that could relate.
And all the IT background and different varied areas of service that you were able to complete eventually led you to creating a Twitch stream. Tell us about that.
Yes. So what led into that actually was I had the knowledge of the audiovisual stuff. I had a lot of coworkers that played games quite a bit, and Twitch or YouTube had been a thing for quite a while. And Twitch was kind of growing more and more and more. And I found myself having pretty exceedingly long conversations with my coworkers about video games. And we just kept on finding ourselves being passionate and talking about it and enjoying it. And I said, you know what? I don't get enough of this. I would love to talk to a huge group of people about video games and show my passion and just kind of, you know, return to the days of couch co-op where you could just sit down, play a game and chat with people.
Nice.
So that led into starting Twitch and you know, being interested in technology as I was. It was something I hadn't done yet. So, you know, it was also driven by that. And I found that I had a lot of success also streaming a specific mod, if you will, called Altus Life, which is an RPG style mod on Arma 3. And I played a police officer in that, and apparently my demeanor and perspective on life led to that, lended very well to that. It was a lot of fun. I did it for about a year and a half, and I had some life stuff come up that took me away from it. And I realized I wouldn't be able to maintain the schedule that I was doing with 9-hour days, excluding transit back and forth, and then getting home, prepping for, you know, doing a couple chores, prepping for the stream, basically being up from 0500 to sleeping at about 0200. So I get about 4 hours of sleep a night for a year and a half.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was a little draining, but it was just, it was so fun. That's the deal. You've got to, like, measured choices. I didn't never wanted to give up my job that I had, and I was, you know, that was what was paying the bills, but I was just having a blast streaming.
Wow.
But for me, it wasn't sustainable. I wasn't making enough to make the dive to full-time streaming, but if I guess would have taken a leap of faith, who knows where it would have gone, but I tend to be a little bit more cautious than I think some people.
Any thoughts of ever going back?
Pretty often. I think it would be, again, with the measured style of decision making, I keep on telling myself maybe when I retire, but then that might be too late. Well, what if I retire early? I can work way harder now and then, you know, retire earlier. A lot of plans. We'll see what happens, but I'm always interested.
A possible bridge, perhaps, or a door. You know what I mean?
Also true. Also true.
I know nothing about Twitch. I'm a boomer, kind of.
Okay.
Almost. I know nothing about Twitch. I enjoy playing video games, but I've never really enjoyed any of the streams, so I never had a chance to get into it.
Gotcha.
But I know people make decent amount of money streaming games.
Yes, indeed. They certainly can.
And if that could have been, I don't know, if that could have been an avenue for more profit, would it be presumable for you to be able to let go of anything that's IT and do like Twitch stream halftime and voice halftime to make your full salary? I don't know. Is that even possible?
I could see that being possible, but there would have to be a certain hurdle or pivot point or something that would happen in one of those. Obviously the Twitch I'm not doing, so it'd be hard to do that. But with the voice acting, if anything were to start gain momentum there, really snowball to a set point that I kind of have in my mind, then I would be able to say, all right, you know what, where I'm at right now, I'm trying to be responsible and have some nest egg savings in case something does come up, to say, all right, I want to take this amount of time and I want to transition to full-time voice acting. And then if I can get pretty, you know, relatively close to comfortable with being able to pay the bills and still do some savings for down the road with retirement and everything, then I can say, all right, I'm at home. 90% of voice acting, maybe 99% is auditioning. So once I get through my auditions, I've auditioned for everything I can, then I could go to streaming. So that I could see that working very well in the future, should that arise.
See, you have a plan in your brain. I can hear it.
it's been thought about, maybe, you know, dreamed about as I fall asleep at night, you know, daydream,
once a day,
whatever.
Or so, maybe twice, of course.
Absolutely.
That's perfect. Okay, well, that leads us right into my next question. What exactly was the precise moment when you realized that voice work could be a viable avenue?
So yeah, it still does definitely go hand in hand with Twitch streaming. It was the moment that I realized that Twitch streaming was not sustainable, and I was so passionate about still being in that style of industry, that entertainment industry, and sharing what I'm passionate about and giving of myself to that style of industry, that I decided to pursue looking into voice acting in general. And I came across a bunch of Reddit posts, and being myself, I significantly researched the topic. And I think I was very fortunate to come across a lot of the resources that are getting promoted more and more today, like I Want to Be a Voice Actor.com with Dee Bradley Baker, and Casting Call Club and Voice Acting Club. They were fantastic resources, and the groups, as mentioned earlier, with Casting Call and Voice Actors Club, have just wonderful people who are willing to work with you. And then after reading all of that literature, I stumbled across you, actually, and you've helped grow my talents and inspired me in many ways to be where I am today and continue success and keep my talent honed and continue to sharpen it as I work on projects here and there.
Oh, I'm flattered, and I'm ultimately happy to be helping. Absolutely. I mean, okay, so over the years, you've been involved in a lot of different small projects, various ones on different platforms here and there. And in your experience in performing these characters and the voice acting, have you found any specific area or genre of voiceover that you found yourself gravitating towards, perhaps?
Definitely video games and the odd narration role. I tend to get casted the most for narration, announcer, and either a medical worker in a video game or a military individual in a video game, and AI in video games.
Oh yeah, you have that AI voice. I think so. Yeah, and the military thing too. I noticed that you say 0500 and 0200 instead of 5 a.m. 2 a.m. like normal people.
That's 18 years of contract work on a military base coming through. And, you know, just to be clear, no prior service here. I respect everybody that does. But yeah, I just work there as a contractor.
Fair enough, indeed. So, and along with you, I'm sure there's many people that are listening that are also on Casting Call Club. How has the experience on Casting Call Club been for you in terms of projects, working on them, getting it finished, working with different directors and different directors of all ages and experiences and size and so on and so forth?
It was definitely a, overall, it was a very good process that I needed to go through, because there's a lot of passionate people on there that are also doing projects that I needed to go in, take a look, and see that a lot of them are honing their skill and talent too, and they're all in different places. And once I kind of targeted my niche, kind of like when a casting director or a VO director goes and looks at all of the auditions and says, okay, those are the ones that I want for my project. When I'm choosing what to audition for, in the same way, Casting Call Club has been a magnificently huge pool of different projects to work on. So you kind of have to play that casting director for yourself to say, all right, who looks like they, you know, fit the kind of role that I'm looking for as far as a project, and then where do I think I can be most successful given how I've been casted in the past, and then look into that particular individual's past projects and see if they agree with my style of acting and things like that.
Yeah.
And then I find that after I do all of that research, that I have fairly good success, and at least and this goes back to earlier when I was saying that measured things have paid off for me in the past. But even if I don't get the roles when I do all of that research, which I've had some decent success rate in doing, I find that those kind of directors and things that agree with my style of voice acting, in my perspective, that I will usually get added to callback lists and things like that because they feel that I was suitable for the role. It just wasn't what they were specifically looking for. So all of the extra work was in the end rewarded for
me.
So, and obviously that's not a guarantee or anything like that, but I just have found that if you find yourself going after more measured projects, as far as, you know, you've got some people who are up and coming, they're not quite full pro, but they're also not quite, you know, doing the Minecraft YouTube video stuff.
Right.
they're moving towards
I'm
their 15 own.
I'm 15 and right. I have an idea.
They're going towards their own specific vision of a project that they're working towards together, and they've had some, you know, small past successes. Those people seem to be the ones that I really want to go work with, the kind of like up and coming indie studio kind of stuff.
That's super interesting, actually, because it kind of segues into what I wanted to ask as well. I think a lot of beginning voice actors are directed to Casting Call Club to get their start, to wet their feet and so on and so forth. Is it important to be selective in terms of which projects to audition for?
I believe so myself. What I found is I did start out as likely most people do, just kind of auditioning for, you know, everything, cast a wide net.
Right.
But what I found in the end is what I believe works for me, and I hope and imagine that this will work for other individuals too, is really be extremely selective about 1 to 2 free time donated roles, things like that, that are kind of like on the edge of your comfort zone. Something that you can really, really learn from other people that you will be working with. And this also lends into kind of going with a little bit more of a acclaimed or a talented crew that's done a lot of stuff. And they're kind of doing it as a passion project. So you're much more likely to get some high talent individuals in there because everybody's donating their time together. Things that come to mind are like mod projects that are full mod overhauls for certain games.
Right.
That have a demonstrated success in news and media with that company. And this is important of them appreciating people doing that rather than, you know, copy striking and things like that. So make sure, do your research, make sure everything's on the level and the company really likes, you know, community source mods. But when you get into those types of scenarios, you'll usually find a very high talent ceiling and you can find yourself learning a lot. But it is also important to recognize the fact that like any other profession, professional or otherwise, voice acting is a talent and you should be paid for your time. So that's why you have to be selective with your choices on the free projects where you want to keep working so that you don't fall back from where you are.
Right.
But
right.
also minimize that time requirement. So that way when you do get jobs or life's going on and things like that, you're more agile and able to pivot towards projects and fall back inside when you need to do life-based things.
Let's talk about another platform that's prominent in the voice work industry, namely Voices.com and Voice123. Are you also a member of either of those organizations, platforms?
I can say that I'm a member on them. Again, as probably most fledgling voice actors start out, they sign up for everything they can in hope to get work. I can say that I don't think I've booked anything through them, but admittedly, I haven't tried too hard. There's a lot of conversations going on about the success of those places, and it does seem like people can find success on them. It seems to be that the already working individuals continue to find work and the newer individuals have a little bit of a hard time. But to be fair, in almost any industry, especially when there's a lot of competition.
Sure. Yeah.
You have to work, you know, sometimes 2, 3, 4, 5 times as hard, even if you're equally as trained and talented, just to get noticed. And
sure.
Then you can start snowballing. So certain people might find that that is the most valuable use of their time. Other people might find that they're more passionate about something else. And I didn't find a lot of things that were just like jumping out to me as, hey, I'm passionate about that. I want to do that. So I kind of just pivoted towards other avenues of looking for audition potential.
I think I'd also like to throw my 2 cents in there as well. I mean,
please. I'm curious.
Just in relation to Casting Call Club and how that platform works, the best advice that was given to me regarding Voices.com and Voice123 was the algorithm. Much like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, much like those platforms that show you content based on the algorithm that was processed through your user data, the idea is the same. The algorithm of your actions that are taken on those platforms and websites dictate the other data points that determine the voice match and the projects that you're invited to, apparently.
Interesting. I did not realize that.
And ever since I have been given that advice to me, I have been super selective in terms of what I audition for in those platforms. So I hope that this is an information that people that are listening, as well as everybody else who are interested in voice industry, can take away. If Facebook and Instagram and everybody else is using algorithms to filter out some of the results and show you the content that you might be interested in, Voices.com and Voice123, who are the top two player in the P2P realm, are definitely using them. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, would have to be. Yeah, absolutely. I did not actually know that, so I'm going to have to go back and take a little bit of a closer look.
Let's switch gears a little bit here. In addition to being a voice actor, you're also fully employed as a full-time employee with a W-2 at a video game studio. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. That's actually a fairly recent change in career path. That happened about eight months ago. After it's been mentioned before, but 18 years with contracting, I have a friend who works in a video game industry, the same one. Ilphonic is the name of the company. And was out to dinner with him one time, and he mentioned the fact that they were looking for a higher level IT individual, and that they were having a very hard time finding one. And he like jokingly offered me the chance of a interview because he thought I would never go for it for whatever reason. He didn't know I play video games at all. And I was like, all right, you know, I'll think about it. And then I went back home and I thought more and more about it. And there was a lot to think about. It was about a 2-hour drive each way from where I was, which was only about 20 minutes. So a little bit of a hike. But what I found is that, at least when I went introspective on this, was I could always do IT anywhere with how I built my career path and how I had my resume. So I realized that I could always, like, if this didn't work out, I could you know, get another IT job. And it's very, very difficult to get in video game companies, honestly, unless you start like very, very entry level. And even then, those are highly, highly competitive positions.
Wow.
Things like QA test teams and entry level art positions and stuff like that. There's just, it's amazing on the inside looking at how many resumes come across the desk. But long story short, I did interview, and I ended up being able to snag the position based on the fact that I had a much wider skill set than anyone else that was applying. And in a video game company, you definitely need to be multidisciplinary when you go in as an IT person. They're really looking for one person to kind of do a lot of jobs.
I bet they keep you busy.
Yes. But it's also great. I get to see industry from the inside, and seeing, you know, our first product was announced, and seeing that kind of be televised and everything. It's weird being on the other side of the fence and like, oh my gosh, now I want to read the comments to see what everybody thinks rather than reading the comments to kind of see from the gamer side, like, oh, what do people think this game's going to be like? So that was a lot of fun. And that's led to some opportunity on the voice acting side too. So that's been very exciting.
Is it okay to ask what you do at Ilphonic?
Yeah, so pretty much anything that has an electron flowing through it, I'm responsible for keeping running. And I build the servers, I handle the baseline software applications, I keep things secure, patched, all sorts of troubleshooting that can be involved, regardless of whether or not it's my main focus of duty. Because again, I love solving problems. But
that's a lot.
Yeah, it's quite a bit. We're looking to potentially get some more people to help out. But it's been fun. And I'm glad I took the leap of faith into it. Again, it's opened other doors. So the CEO of the company is a Grammy award winning music guy, and he's given me some opportunities to record scratch audio for games. And I recently got some pretty cool opportunities that have opened doors, and I'm excited to see if they fruition, if I can walk through those doors that got open. So we'll see what happens there.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So again, a measured decision to join a video game company. Wink, wink.
Yeah. I mean, it's these moments and decisions that we make, measured or not, I think, to a certain extent, that opens doors that leads to the next thing, right? I mean, you're an IT guy at Ilphonic now, but who knows? Next thing you know, you'll be in the studio.
Well,
I don't know.
I try to hope for the best and plan for the worst kind of thing.
Well, knock, knock on my studio panels here for you. That's, there you go.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Okay, good. Let's move on to the next section.
Alrighty.
Now that you have been in, semi, if you will, in the voice industry, what is one thing that you wish you had known before you jumped in, if you will?
Oh, goodness. I wish, honestly, I would have known to take the additional time to really take acting a little bit more. I don't want to say seriously, because I really respected the fact that I needed to do it, but I didn't understand really how to open myself up to be able to perform on microphone and present myself really in a genuine way. And I thought I had an idea of what that was. I kept on running against this wall where I would do the recording, I would listen to it, and I said, like, that's not enough. And I couldn't find out what it was. It's hard work. It's hard, hard work.
Indeed.
But once you kind of get there, it's rewarding work. So you got to put in a lot of time. It is a profession.
I would agree with you 100%. Absolutely. Oh, man. The acting on the microphone is so very different than stage. My goodness.
Yeah. And I guess if there was one other thing, it's that often when you're working on a script and you're interacting with someone else, it's a lot harder than you think to react to someone who's not really there. They're just on a paper and you can't read their emotion back, right?
Yeah.
So that would be the other big thing, probably tied with the first. So can I ask you if there was one thing that you wish you would have known at the beginning? I'm not sure I've ever heard that. I've talked to you a decent amount, and I would really love to know that.
If there was one thing that I wish I had known before jumping in, it would be about acoustic treatment of an environment.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think that I could have started out with like a Snowball or a Blue Yeti or some of the other USB microphones. My very first mic was the Rode NT1. Just like you, I took a very measured approach and watched a bunch of YouTube videos and read a bunch of articles and came to the conclusion that USB microphones is a no-go. You know?
Right, absolutely. That's everywhere on the internet whenever you ask anyone.
But what's more important than the microphone quality is the space that you record in. The reverb and the echo and everything else. When I first started, I was reading some of that comments. I put myself in the corner of my garage with layers of bath towels hanging around all around me on a padded table with my iPad and because I was afraid of the fan noise from my laptop. And that's how I started my journey. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And if I had known that having this whisper room in the house would change everything for the rest of my career, I would have jumped on it a lot sooner, I think.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that as well. Did you find yourself that when you did your first recordings, you just didn't hear the reverb when you listened back? Because I know that was my case. And then later, when I did the sound treatment and everything, and I did an A-B comparison, it was like in that exact moment that I was like,
whoa.
Oh, wow.
Night whoa, yeah, and day, basically, like, yeah. Whoa!
I guess I see why they do this now.
Yeah, and really, for anybody who's listening, who's getting started, I would think that the treatment of the room to reduce the reverb, echo, as all these things would be the first priority on top of, it'd be even before the type of microphone that you get. I've heard various USB microphones that are of higher quality than the Blue Yeti per se, and they're recording in a walk-in closet with a bunch of clothes hanging all around them. Not that I could tell obviously, but the quality itself was passable.
Right. It, you can make things work, especially when you're starting out. It doesn't have to be expensive.
Precisely.
Just research it, and there's a lot of resources out there, some of which have been mentioned here.
You know what? That's a really good segue into the next segment. I did this in the first episode as well. I think personally that the equipment that we use and the equipment that we upgrade to from one to the other is a really interesting and pretty accurate mile markers of our progress in this industry. I'm also interested in finding out what you started out with and what you're on now.
Yeah. So if I would probably have to back up a little bit to what I actually started out with when doing voice acting. That was going back to Twitch. And I just had a gaming headset. And then I was like, you know, this isn't enough. So I got an AT2020 USB, unfortunately, at the time. And I used that all the way up until like my intro on voice acting all the way through. Mm-hmm. And then it was around that time that I started reading more and more. And I saw the typical, like, you know, maybe it's okay to start out on, but if you're going to go, you know, make this a serious hobby or semi-professional kind of somewhere in there, go with XLR, look at your options and things like that. So it was around that time that I went to Casting Call Club and talked to the gear and audio tech people there, which fantastic, by the way. They actually took the time to help me and profile my voice and make some recommendations. And I ended up getting an XLR. I ended up with the same microphone in XLR format and an Audience ID4 interface device. And I used that for quite a while. And I was talking with them and I was working on my studio and trying to get the reverb under control. And eventually I said, you know what? I like solving problems. I'll just do the DIY method. Got some mineral wool and wrapped it in felt and put it on the walls. And they were like, oh, that sounds great. But now that we're listening to it with less reverb, we want to make this other recommendation. So now I have a Aston Origin microphone, which is what we're listening to here. And I really, really like this microphone as far as what it's able to capture. It doesn't deepen the bass in my voice, which has been very nice because I found that to be a big problem for me with the AT2020 is even removing myself for the proximity effect where I'm very close to the microphone. There was just a lot of rumble kind of going on from my voice. And I have this now and I'm now slightly getting a little worried because anytime I get passionate about things, I start wanting to get all these things. So I have a big wish list on Amazon that luckily I've been restraining myself from, and my wife's been helping me with restraining myself from too. So the only two mics I own now, because I ended up selling the AT2020s and all of that, are the Aston Origin I just recently got, and I did listen to Jessica's podcast too, so this amused me. But I have the Stellar X2 as well. I like that one as very much too. I find that it seems odd. It's almost like 50-50 because I'll try to do an audition if the audition recipient is okay with it. Some of them don't care and some of them are like, yeah, sure, do this. I'll give them a kind of a profile on two different microphones, and I find that they like 50-50. They're very polarized. Some of them will say, I like this mic a lot, or I like that mic a lot, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll do that for you on the microphone when I get the audition/job. Usually it's more prevalent that I'll do that after I get the audition but some cases, depending on what they're asking for, I think it might benefit me to send both. I'll do that if they'll ask for two takes.
I think it's really helpful to analyze the frequency response of any microphone before you start jumping in, because you should know where your voice sits and how the microphone compliments to your voice. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I find that even if you have something that's very similar on specifications and frequency response, if you do an A-B comparison, you'll still even notice differences. It's very interesting. It's like the components that go into the build quality can make that difference.
Isn't Denver cold right now?
Yes.
How cold is it?
We've had I think the highest we've gotten in the last 2 weeks is low 30s right now, and our evenings are 10-15 degrees, somewhere around there.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's I like it because when I travel to other places for work or on vacation, I was in LA recently for work and attended the Game Awards, and it got down to I think 58 degrees there, and I'm walking around with a t-shirt. I'm like, this is amazing. It's so nice. Everybody's running
cold.
Like,
what are you talking about?
People look at you like you're crazy, and I'm like, oh, this is wonderful. This is the hottest it's been forever.
It was 42 this morning, and it was super cold. I just want you to know that. It was 42.
I admit 42 is pretty chilly, and it is more humid there, and that matters. So,
is Denver a great place to live?
It is a very awesome place to live, especially if you're an outdoors kind of person. I not really one myself, but it's a beautiful place, wonderful views, a lot of things to do, and it's getting better. It used to be smaller, and the surrounding cities have grown a lot in the last 10 years. Denver has really started pulling in a lot of entertainment style stuff recently as well. I went and looked for local like agencies and stuff like that and different studios. And I was actually surprised with how many I found in the last 6 months. And I'm still doing a lot of research on that. It's still very foreign to me, but I have a feeling that pretty close up in my future, probably within the next 12 to 18 months, I want to start sending out some feelers for different agencies I might be able to join to try and up that amount of potential work I could get, because it is a lot of work to try and do all the auditions yourself and not have, you know, other people being able to send you things. So I think that's a natural progression in this much more serious, probably starting to get into the maybe I want to go semi-professional with this.
Speaking of, any thoughts of relocating to LA, New York?
I would be lying if I said I didn't think about it. It's definitely been a thought. I've even gone so far as to have some semi-serious conversations with my wife about it. But
yeah,
it would definitely have to be a thing where it would be a measured decision of, all right, I've actually transitioned fully, like, to the point of my job where we can move and be comfortable and know, because she works too. I've been very fortunate. She's an amazing woman. She also has been able to help with everything that I've done so far. She's kind of like my VO coach behind me, just giving me the hey, as the person who watches things, this sounds natural or not, which has been awesome. And she has no problem being honest with me. So
excellent.
That's been great. But yeah, I've thought about that. I've thought about the area. I've been to LA quite a bit for both my previous job and my current job.
Right.
And I'd have to say that the only things that would be preventing me are just needing a little bit more work coming out of that area before doing that. And I really don't like traffic, but I think I could get over that one.
You get used to it. Or you buy a motorcycle like I do and just go through the traffic.
There you go. There you go. You've already got it all figured out.
Now, one of my all-time idols ever in my life, Anthony Bourdain, used to ask this question to all of his guests that he would go and interview.
Okay.
Today's your last day here on Earth. You know, and all of his guests were chefs. So he would say, what would you cook to eat? In your case, Jeremy Johnson, what would you make or what would you get to eat as your last meal here on Earth?
Oh, goodness. I really like food. So this is so many options, right? I would have to say a Vietnamese banh mi sandwich.
Ooh.
I love those things. I love the difference of ingredients. I love the difference of styles. I love the roasted meat that goes in them. I love the pickled vegetables. It's kind of a whole spectrum of culinary everything that goes into it, and I just really like the way it tastes.
any specific shops in the Denver area that you'd recommend?
There is actually a place in Denver off of Federal Boulevard that I believe it's just called Vietnamese Bakery. That's how you know it's good, right? It's just a sign that, you know, Vietnamese Bakery.
Exactly. That's how you know.
Yeah, you walk in and they make them to order. They have fresh made bread. They toast it. They put the nice thin French creamy butter on it. They pickle everything there. They roast
nice.
The chasu. It's wonderful. Wonderful.
Good choice.
Probably there. Yeah, it'd be that one.
Good choice.
Well, thank you.
What are your goals for 2020? Let's go with that, personal and professional.
So I started chuckling because I was just on the way home. I was like, for my professional goals, it's basically to get through the next 2 months because I have about 11 projects I need to do to make sure everything is ready before launch. So I need to remain sane and complete 11 projects. That's my professional goals. And then for my personal it would be to ensure beyond a shadow of a doubt I can maintain my work-life balance, and that includes my voice acting, to basically ensure that I keep my wife happy, I keep my family happy, I'm not just disappearing under a rock, and I can maintain those relationships while still pursuing the things that I'm passionate about.
Keep the wife happy is a really good advice.
Yeah, and it's become harder and harder lately because I'm never around, and I'm working on that. And so far, it's been really good. I've been able to balance things a lot better. I pulled back on my rabid auditioning to everything on the internet and much more measured approach.
Okay, last question.
All right.
What's next for Jeremy Dwayne Johnson? What do you have coming up? Where do you go from here? And if the audience that are listening want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
So coming up professionally, my company has announced Predator Hunting Grounds. Please, if you're a fan of the genre, check that out. It's on PS4 and PC through the Epic Games Store, April of 2020. Personally, I have had a series of doors opened recently for voice acting, and I can't unfortunately talk about that right this second, but hopefully on my Twitter, which is where you can most easily contact me at Jeremy Johnson VO. That will be announced hopefully soon, I think in a couple of weeks. So,
that's intriguing.
Yeah, pretty exciting. Pretty exciting. Can't stop smiling.
Nice. Oh, congratulations on that. That's great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Hope it turns into something big and something groundbreaking for you. That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
You know, I would take slightly above small because I feel like I would just be blown over by groundbreaking, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much for spending some time here with me this evening. It's been super great. You're a great guy to begin with in the first place. I know you. I know we have a lot of different short projects that we've done together in the past. How many months that I've known you, and it's always been prompt delivery and excellent acting and great sound quality. I wish for nothing else than superb fortune and great success for your future. I wish it. I hope that it all happens for you. That's my hope.
Thank you very much, Jude. And I can say likewise. You've been so awesome to work with. That you've been a font of information and learning. And it's been really good to work with you. You've been just so awesome to work with. And thank you for having me here. I really do appreciate that.
Absolutely. And next time you're in LA, definitely hit me up. Let's get together and get some Korean barbecue going.
Oh, that'd my be other weakness. All right, you've convinced me.
Well, Jeremy Dwayne Johnson, thank you very much for being on the show and sharing some time here with us. I'm sure everybody who's listening has received a lot of great information about how to get started. And those of us that are in the middle of our journey have found some time to relate and identify and perhaps even be entertained by our conversation.
Good stuff. Well, thanks again. I really appreciate
Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate it. Have a good night, okay?
You too. Take care. This has been Voice Actor Showcase. Visit our website at voiceactorshowcase.com. If you'd like to be featured on this podcast, contact us at voiceactorshowcase.com. Thanks for listening.